host today, and we are part of a new program. This is just our second broadcast, and we're going to be with you on Wednesdays from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. Central Time, so pass the word on. And today's topic, we're going to talk a little bit about one of the subjects we covered a little bit last week. We started to discuss the idea of enhanced human performance or affecting the human mind by external sources, which is going to be a complicated subject. But we're going to have 2 hours to explore it today, so we'll lay a good foundation. For those that are interested in calling in today, the call-in number, just to remind listeners, is 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. And this program we're going to primarily deal with over the course of the next several months and on an ongoing basis, the whole issue of technologies. You know, from the invention of the wheel to where we are right now, technology will double about every 10 months. At this rate of change, there's little time to consider the consequences, much less create solutions for what we're facing in the future. These new technologies will either free us to our individual higher potentials as created human beings or enslave us to the devices of the elite and corporately corrupt governments around the world. In true democracies and democratic republics, the average person controls the destiny of nations. In the 21st century, it's technologies that define the strength and power of nations. This radio program is about the issues that will return power to people through education, applied technologies, and frank discussion of these new technologies. It's time for an awakening of the spirit within each of us. We have higher potentials. We need to reclaim that birthright as created human beings. Created in the image of the Creator, it's time to remember who we are and the directions we want our world and nations and communities to go. And with that, today's topic, the idea of physically controlling the mind, I consider one of the most important. And this whole issue really, for me, starts back in the mid-1980s, when I began to really look at this issue. And by way of background, for those that don't know me, I have a doctorate in traditional and complementary medicines. My area of interest was, in fact, electrophysiology, the effect of electromagnetic fields on the human body. And as a part of that, looking at specifically external sources of energy that could affect our physical health, our mental states, and our basic condition as human beings. And, you know, there's a lot of emphasis in the last decade about physical health and the idea of improving our physical health in terms of what we saw in gyms and jogging as a pattern of habit. You know, a lot of things changed to make people aware that our physical health is extremely important. In this decade, perhaps a little more emphasis has been placed on our mental health, and we've seen sort of the misuses of that with the proliferation of pharmaceuticals and just the stress-related illnesses, anxiety-related disorders, all the kinds of things that are not only affecting adults within our population and around the world, but also affecting children and many profound and sometimes pretty negative ways. So today, we're going to set the stage for talking about two sides of this issue. We're going to talk about the development of these technologies and how they began, sort of where the technologies are today in terms of misuses, misapplications. And then we're going to get into the other side of this coin, where the technology is going that can enhance human performance and maybe elevate those anomalous potentials that each of us have that make us more equipped to deal with a more complex and technical world. So that's kind of setting the stage for today. We'll take in calls today. I want to mention also a lot of the research is provided by the Lay Institute on Technology, and we'll talk a little bit about that right after the break. Back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And we appreciate being here today. We appreciate you being here as well. For our call-in number, if you'd like to call in the course of the the conversation. The call-in number is 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443 if you want to be on the air with me and join the discussion. I was just talking before the break, some of the issues that we are covering on these programs. The research itself is provided through the Lay Institute on Technology, which is a Texas-based nonprofit. You can find information on the Lay Institute and what we're about at www.layinstitute.org. Again, layinstitute.org. And on other aspects of our work in terms of what we've been publishing and writing and even the subject of today, you can find more information on that at earthpulse.com. And along the lines of this type of research, the Lay Institute has really set itself up to allow us to spend more time not just researching the technologies themselves, but also disclosing to the public the impacts of those technologies. So with that, one of the most important issues that we're trying to disclose today and talk about today, again, is this idea of physical control of the mind. We produced about a year ago, actually, a DVD on this subject called Mind Control. And this, you know, this DVD was pretty controversial when it came out, and it goes back to sort of the interest in this area goes back, as I said earlier, to the 1980s, where I became very interested in the idea that we could externally affect the way the human brain operates. Now, in the course of researching a subject called HARP here in Alaska, which was the subject of an expose that Gene Manning and I wrote about back in the mid-90s, also had some implications for physical control of the mind. But we have to go back historically to really lay a foundation in this area, and we got to go back even to the 1920s when Estabrook at Harvard University and other Eastern universities were involved in the study of hypnosis. And most people know about hypnosis in terms of affecting the human brain, but what a lot of us don't know, and a lot of people haven't realized, is that under hypnosis, a lot of strange things can happen. You know, your recall is almost perfect. You can even recall, for instance, the number of telephone poles between your workplace and your home, as an example, under hypnosis. Because basically, everything that the senses take in, no matter how that information is put in, whether it's from the sense of touch, smell, taste, from our sight, from our hearing, it's recorded in our brains and laid down in a way that records it forever. The problem is, and always has been for many of us, is our ability to recall or pull that information back up. And this is the challenge, I think, in terms of enhancing human performance, is how do we access what we are more completely? And I think that's where the military interest has gone as well. But you got to go back to this sort of idea in the 20s when Estabrook and others at Harvard were looking at this concept of physical control of the mind. They believed at that point they could produce a person that could essentially have two personalities, a personality that would come out under hypnosis and can be directed and manipulated, and one that would be the normal person's personality. And the idea of creating what today we would call, you know, by reference and in the popular literature, the Manchurian Candidate, this was the objective of Estabrook back in the 20s. Unfortunately for him, and fortunately for the rest of us, those ideas weren't taken very seriously back then. It wasn't until the Korean conflict that these ideas sort of came back into a major discussion within the United States. And the Korean conflict of the early 50s, for those that remember, the Chinese were, of course, involved, and we had young men coming back from that conflict who had been prisoners of war that were displaying just really bizarre behaviors. These were the kind of behaviors that led to the term brainwashing. In fact, it was after the Korean conflict that term actually came into popular use, because these returning veterans, these returning prisoners of war, actually were displaying symptoms that were quite bizarre. They'd gone from patriotic young men to these guys passing out communist leaflets on street corners, and we just couldn't fathom what had happened. And at that point, our intelligence community began to look much more seriously at this whole issue of physical control of the mind. What then happened is, of course, of a lot of research began to be initiated in the 50s and through the 1960s. This was done primarily through the Central Intelligence Agency and other private companies at the time that were engaged in research activities for the government. There was actually a paper, it was a presidential report that was put out in June 1976, and it was right after sort of the misuses of power on the in terms of the Central Intelligence Agency, and it was a report to the president on exactly that, misuses of power by the Central Intelligence Agency that had taken place during the 60s predominantly, where at that time they were involved in things like domestic spying. Sounds familiar. Sounds like what's going on today with that. Domestic spying was part of the Central Intelligence agenda back in the 60s. They engaged in mail intercepts. We didn't have the internet, so they weren't messing with that, but they were tapping telephone lines. They were involved in infiltrating domestic groups, like groups that were opposed to government policies at the time. The same kinds of things that are happening today with organizations that speak out on American policy, not always in a complimentary way. These abuses also were focused on in terms of human experimentation within the Central Intelligence Agency and within this presidential report from 1976. It was revealed that the agency had, in fact, involved thousands of unwitting Americans in human experiments in the area of mind control. One particular program that got a lot of notoriety and most people are now familiar with is, of course, the MK Ultra programs run by the Central Intelligence Agency in the United States. Now, this program was actually run domestically, although even back in the 60s, we were outsourcing some of this work outside of the country because of its volatile nature, much in the same way as we take our dirty work out of the United States today, so that somehow we feel like we're released from it. But that is not the case either. I think most Americans will agree that where representatives of our government, representatives of our way of life, move out into the world, they carry with them the seeds of this democracy. They don't leave it at the door of this democratic republic. And I think that's what's missing in much of this area of research. You know, in the course of MK Ultra and what began to happen with MK Ultra, we saw more and more interest on the part of the government. A lot of it, as I said, was put out to other organizations. There was a number of these organizations that were used for doing primarily research for the government, something they weren't equipped to do in this area. They were looking for the specialists within the sciences. So I think that's, again, sort of laying this approach and direction. Back in the 80s, a lot of breakthroughs were being made in terms of discovery about how to affect the human body. And I think this is where the foundation begins to get laid, is what they found is that the human body could be affected by external energy sources. In other words, instead of the things that we're used to seeing in warfare, bullets, bombs, ordnance, things that rip tissue, that destroy buildings, they were looking at energy effects, just energy itself. And I'm not talking about things like high-powered laser, which cuts through even metal and just about anything in its path. We're talking about very subtle, light amount of energy, not high concentrations of energy, that could be used specifically for affecting the body and brains of individuals. This technology was actually sought in the 80s, and the Air Force, through the Science Advisory Board, put together a contract that was won by the University of Utah, where they actually created the dosimetry, the radio frequency dosimetry handbook. The dosage is necessary in the radio frequency range to override the various organs of the body. Brain, heart, liver, lungs, all of these were explored and analyzed by the Air Force and the University of Utah, and specific information was developed. This information was necessary for the future development of weapons applications for this kind of technology. There was a book that we had written a number of years ago. It was Earth Rising, the Revolution. And within that book is a chapter that discusses mind control technologies and their evolution. And within that, one of the most startling statements that comes out, and this is one I'd just like to read this quote, because it really tells you the direction in which some of this technology Kentucky was headed. And it says, it would, and I'm quoting from New World Vistas, Air and Space Power for the 21st Century, and it's the ancillary volume for the Science Advisory Board of the Air Force, and it's from 1996. So it's a little bit dated, but I want to mention this one quote that sort of lays the foundation. It says, and I quote, "It would also appear possible to create high-fidelity speech in the human body, raising the possibility of covert suggestion and psychological direction. Thus, it may be possible to talk to selected adversaries in a fashion that would be most disturbing to them," unquote. What this is saying is essentially the idea of even sending a voice directly into the brain of a human being so they could hear that voice, just like people are hearing my voice on the radio today, except everyone around them wouldn't hear a thing. It would be like that voice in the head giving you direction, giving you suggestion, and no one else hearing it. It would be and could very easily be a created illusion. It could be their voice of their god or deity that would affect the way they think and maybe cause a person to act. Now, you know, that was 1996, and it was certainly speculation on what was coming. But in 2005, they actually delivered on the technology. And we're going to talk about that right after the break. MIT actually gave an award for the guy who invented it. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And this program will be aired from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. Central Time every Wednesday. So please pass that word on. We've got a couple callers that have been hanging in there for a while. Why don't we go ahead and take Jeanette from Canada. Go ahead, Jeanette. Are you still
Hello?
With us? Hi. How are you today?
Oh, not bad.
All right. Well, you had a question or a comment you wanted to make?
Oh, I wasn't sure who I was talking to. I was listening to your program, and you're talking about the mind control?
That's right. You're speaking with Dr. Nick Begich.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wasn't Timothy McVeigh? I've heard rumors about him being so-called under mind control.
You know, I've heard that as well. You know, and you know, the question of some of these guys that perpetrate some real disasters. You know, it seems like every time this issue comes up, and there was one in particular that we were able to substantiate. Many remember, in fact, most people remember the Unabomber, this guy that was kind of held up in the mountains and was building bombs and mailing them out to folks. People don't realize, but the New York Times actually reported the Unabomber was one of these early victims of the MK Ultra experiments when he was at Harvard University. He was one of the guys that was a part of that program. Now, whether that program resulted in his disconnect from a society in a way that led to those problems, I think if you read some of the writings this guy had put together, you know, you could see some real disturbed thinking. It's the kind of thinking, the kind of outcome from these programs that one could expect. When you look at the development of the idea of a Manchurian candidate, we ran into a lot of data on this, and we were able to get over 300 source documents showing the development of this technology, and we've compiled those in actual book form so we can lay the foundation for all of this. It'll come out sometime in the next eight to 9 weeks. But McVeigh and some of these other guys certainly fit that frame or appear to us to be people that could easily have been influenced in this way. But
right.
Without hard paper, it's not something that, you know, I could say definitively in his case. In the Unabomber's case, we know he had a history connected to these programs operated by our government.
Okay. Yeah.
Did you have anything else you wanted to add, Jeanette?
No, I was just mentioning about Timothy McVeigh. I had heard that, eh? That he
All
has
right.
been under mind control. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Jeanette. And we've got another caller in Colorado. We'll go ahead and take Rita, if she's still with us.
Hi, Nick.
Are you there, Rita?
Yeah, this is Rita.
Oh, good to have you on. Yes, I can.
Yeah, this is Rita Hill. I was the head of the Directed Energy Mind Control Forum on Genie for a while. Crossed paths a couple times, I think.
Sure, I'm sure we have.
And the main thing I want to get across, first of all, is really the concept that we're talking about is mind driving.
Right.
We've got some factors that have to be taken into consideration, and they can't really control your mind unless you're caught into some cult. There's got to be a cult anchor that'll trigger the altar or whatever actions mind control takes. And so I've been I've been through the ringer through the past decade or so, and contrary to some maybe rumors, I'm not dead. I don't know about Walter Ballard, but I'm not dead. I've been through I've had a whole lot of carnivore and I've experienced what they do, and it's been really disconcerting. But what I've had the opportunity to do is to talk back to their cult, because what the military people have to do to have an organization is to put together a cult of people, and you need to understand where they're going is they think they're above righteous people, religious people that have tradition, that practice their own tradition, because they think, well, we like Jews, we like Christians, we're sort of in between. Well, really, there isn't any Jew Christianity. That's just kind of what military people and this kind of government, the people that get elected in America, basically turn into. So I found that the best way to talk back is to talk back to their cult, and I've actually got a back channel on the intelligence community right now, and we're working to roll it over.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call on this. There's a lot going on in this area, and I can tell you, from my perspective, every time that we talk about this issue, we get a lot of calls from folks that give us a lot of information, mainly the things that we've relied on historically, and what's given our work the opportunity to take these issues forward is the idea of really sticking with what we can show in documents. And this is where victims of this technology can be very helpful, because people are scattered around the country. They're near academic libraries where a lot of this research has taken place over the last few decades. And we have many people working sort of those back channels as well, digging those records out, getting them to us in a way that we can make them public. As a result of that, over the years, we've been able to collect, a mass of documents, laying a foundation again that's useful when we start talking about policy changes and the potential of restricting some of this. When you talk about psychic driving, pushing the brain frequencies into specific areas, this is really where this technology is headed. There's a lot happening in this area. And when we come back from the break, we'll talk about what the European Parliament has done as a result of some of our research to try and raise the level of interest in this area. And so right after the break, we'll be back and we'll talk about that and what's happening on the international scene. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And this program, again, is going to be aired regularly. We're going to be on from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Wednesday Central Time. So stay tuned and continue to follow us and pass the word on that we're going to be on the air. Rita, are you still hanging in there in Colorado?
Maybe I can call you a couple more times if you're going to continue on this. I've got a lot of things to talk about.
You had a comment you wanted to make today. You can go ahead and make it. You're on with Dr.
Yeah. Oh, one thing, I brought up the thing about kind of cult psychology for the mind drivers, and a way, we need to think about, a lot of these people, they consider themselves righteous Christians. Well, there's an article that it has just come out by Patrick Theros, who was the ambassador, U.S. Foreign Service for 36 years in the Middle East, ambassador to Qatar from 1995 to 1998, he just wrote an article, which is called How the West Destroyed Christianity in Its Birthplace. And so this really strikes at the heart of the people that do some of this stuff. And so if we got, really using democracy to fix the problem, you know, we should really research what's going on. And the people are trying to rewrite history, basically. They want to say there was no Treaty of Omar and, you know, there are no Orthodox Christians in America. Well, there are, you know. I'm one. And so we got rights, and we need to understand that there's a reason that different people have different religions, and the strength of America is our religious stoicism. And what Bush did, what the real treason that Bush is involved in is he had to create a war in which England would be our ally, because England has got a different system. You know, they're a monarchy. They've got, basically, they've got a state church. So if things change, if times change, then their religion changes with you know, the times, you know, to deal with immigration and stuff. Well, that's not America, you know.
Right.
So if you're gonna charge Bush with treason, that's the motive, and that's the treason that he's made.
All right. Well, Rita, thanks for calling in. Let me comment a couple of things that you've raised that remind me of a couple of stories. You know, the idea of political leaders, you know, having strong religious and philosophical base. I absolutely agree with that. You know, my dad was in the state senate here for 8 years, and he was in the United States Congress back in the 92nd Congress just before the Watergate story broke. And, you know, when I think back on sort of what influences government, certainly everyone that I ever met had really deep convictions. You know, when you think about, you know, what took this issue on, you know, one of the first places where we began to raise some of these concerns was in a group meeting. It was a meeting of GLOBE held in Brussels, Belgium, where I was invited in as a expert witness and speaker on the issue of HAARP. And as a part of that, first, let me tell you who was in attendance. We had over 200 legislators. These are nationally elected legislators from over 44 countries, and we were invited in by virtue of the fact that the foreign affairs chairman of the European Parliament had read our material, was very concerned, not just about the HAARP issue, which is an issue maybe we'll cover a little bit next week, but it was the idea that government and that technologies were being developed that could actually override or influence human behavior. And this became a very important aspect of the whole discussion that we were having in Europe. So we presented to this group, GLOBE, and right after the presentation, an elderly woman approached me and she said, "Hello, I'm Maria Beckett, and I represent the Orthodox Church, and we trace our roots to the island of Patmos and the revelation of John, and what you've just delivered is the apocalypse." And I said, "Well, you know, I mean, that kind of hits you pretty hard," and you think about it for a second, and you said, "Well, you know, I appreciate, you know, your comment, your perception of what I presented." And she said, "Well, we have this conference coming up. Would you consider going?" And, you know, I said, "Well, you know, I get a lot of invitations over the years," and I asked them to go ahead and send me the information, which they did. And it turned out the conference was on the Black Sea, and it was a closed conference. The people hosting it was Bartholomew the First, who is the first patriarch for the Orthodox Church from Istanbul, and Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, who has a real interesting and mixed history. Well, the Orthodox, for those that don't remember, split from the Catholic Church back in 1054 A.D., and they went their own way, and they ended up having the East, and the Catholics had the West. It's been the source of a lot of problems ever since, but nonetheless, what came out of that, I went ahead and went to this conference on the Black Sea. It's a longer story than this, but the basic thing was it was an opportunity to talk to policymakers and scientists and researchers. Over 400 of us were on the ship. It included political leadership from a number of countries. It included religious figures from basically all of the major religions, particularly emphasis on those religions within the Black Sea region, which was Christians, Jews, Muslims, with the main three. But the point was, the conference itself was called Religion, Science, and the Environment. I mean, what a bizarre mix of things to come from an outsider's perspective to be mixed together. And yet, the conclusions of this conference was that everybody was saying the same things. What science was trying to express with their language and religion was expressing with their language was an expression of creation. And the source of that creation was, in fact, a creator. But in the end of that conference, we had an opportunity to set an agenda for political debate within the European Parliament that eventually led to a resolution in the European Parliament dealing with the issue of HAARP and also the issue of manipulation, mind control. And it was under their European Parliament resolution A4-0005/99 and section 27. It calls for an international convention introducing a global ban on all developments and deployments of weapons which might enable any form of manipulation of human beings, unquote. And the reason that that was able to get into the language of the resolution was we actually demonstrated what's called an infrasound device, a device that transfers voice information, just like people are, again, hearing my voice on the radio, but transfer that information directly into the brains of individuals. And a couple of segments ago, we were talking about this invention that was done. I had read a quote out of New World Vistas Air and Space for the 21st Century about this idea of projecting a voice in the head. And in that case, it would be done wirelessly, no physical contact to the individual, nothing connecting them, no implants, none of that, just a straight beam signal that the brain could break down and interpret as sound. Now, MIT actually recognized the inventor of this and gave him a $500,000 reward last year. It was a major AP news story. He won $500,000 under the MIT Lemelson Prize. And if you go to MIT's website and look up the Lemelson Prize, you'll find this gentleman's invention. You can also find it through the internet on, he's a publicly traded company, his symbol is ADCO, A-T-C-O, and you can actually see his company profile and the technologies that he's developed. Well, this idea of transferring sound directly to the brain, again, is a form of driving or projecting, because one of the things that comes out when you start to look at the literature, and I'm quoting from Earth Rising, The Revolution, there's a article that we were able to find, and it was called The Mind Has No Firewalls, and it was published in 1998 in the U.S. Army War College Quarterly called Perimeters, and you can find it online. The Mind Has No Firewalls was also sort of the reproduction of a earlier paper done by a Russian publication called Orienteer, which is a Russian military journal. And this is what they said was already possible, and I'm quoting, and it says, a psychotronic generator which produces a powerful electromagnetic emanation capable of being sent through telephone lines, TV, radio networks, supply pipes, and incandescent lamps. This signal would manipulate the behavior of those in contact with the signal, unquote. What it's saying is that these external signals can come through any carrier, whether it be radio, TV, the internet, even phone lines and power grids can be used to piggyback a signal on those carriers. It comes in and has a profound impact on human psychology, human health. Back in February of 1999, there was a show called Undercurrents that ran on Canadian Broadcasting, CBC-TV, their public broadcaster, on this issue of mind control. And we were one of the folks that were interviewed along with Smirnov from the Psychocorrection Institute in Russia, and also Persinger from Laurentian University in Canada was interviewed, who's involved in this kind of research, and a number of others, the Morrises, who introduced non-lethal weapons along with decline to the Reagan Bush administration way back when non-lethal weapons were getting a lot of discussion. But what all of these folks talked about was that you could, using external energy sources at very, very low concentrations, affect the brain chemistry in such a way and so dramatically as not only transferring voice but changing emotional state, etc., are discussed within the literature. And, you know, in the course of our work, you know, we produced a DVD called Mind Control, which you can find at www.earthpulse.com. And within this DVD, we were able to show the evolution of the technology, much in the same way we're just having the discussion today. But what we also did is that attach to that a CD-ROM that gives you all of the bibliographical references. Where did this information come from? And what you'll find is most of our data comes straight out of the open literature, either from academic research studies, military release documents that were at least released and available at the time they were acquired. Many of those documents under the so-called Patriot Acts have actually restricted the ability of people to see with some level of transparency what's going on with their government. But this area of physical control of the mind became very important to me because you cannot block it out. In other words, when you bring these systems in, what Smirnov and the psychocorrection institute in Russia said was that these actually bypass the conscious mind in such a way and in such a compelling manner that they cannot be resisted. He said, and I quote, "It's like a commandment from God. It cannot be resisted," unquote. And Smirnov said that because these techniques and these technologies drop below the level of consciousness, where the conscious level is where we sort out good and evil, right and wrong. We measure things that come into us based on our value systems and our belief systems. When we bypass all of that, we drop it straight into the subconscious in a way that anchors it. And if it sets up conflicts with other beliefs that we hold, then that becomes the root in many cases, to psychosis. And so this whole idea of controlling from external sources, the mind, has been an interest to the military going back again to the Korean War. But as we trace it back and trace it up, what we find is more insidious uses. In fact, there was a paper published in the Air Force Journal. It's an Air Force military journal called Horizons. And in June 2004's issue, they dealt with this idea of controlled effects, which is now where this mind control fits. It's not just about controlling hardware and software, the computer systems that run that hardware, but also controlled effects, according to this article, by the Electromagnetic Directorate of the Air Force, are about controlling the human operator, affecting the human being, overriding our senses of taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound to give us these false illusions that can have a dramatic effect on our ability to wage war and to engage in combat. Today, Project Solo, before we go into combat areas, goes in with aircraft that fly over the areas. They engage the local broadcasters, override those broadcasters, and embed these kinds of signals on those broadcasts. In the first Gulf War, this was reported right after the war by Scottish media, when they said that this was the most devastating technology used in the war because they were able to put on the sound going into the communities, the Muslim music and prayers coming over their normal airwaves, signals that created panic and fear in terms of emotional responses by anyone listening. And these emotional responses were manifest in the first Gulf War by the fourth largest army in the world collapsing like kids on their first fire drill. And, you know, having said all that, these are very compelling technologies. And we're going to be getting into more of this as we finish up this hour and get into the next one. But we've got a couple of callers. We've got John in Alabama, and we'll take him, and then we'll take Jeff in Massachusetts. John, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Dr. Begish. Good to speak with you.
Well, thanks for calling in. What can I answer? Do you have a comment you'd like to make?
Mainly a comment and a question. A really good friend of mine who's in his 80s was in World War II and a very strong, staunch patriot, very patriotic fellow, and he got a book back in the 50s, and it was an Army manual. It was a handbook put out by the Department of the Army. And the title of it, I'm going to try to get close to the title. The title of it was The Interrogation, Indoctrination, and Exploitation of American Prisoners of War in Korea.
Right.
Now, that's close to the title. It's maybe not exact. And he can't find that book. He's lost it in the attic somewhere. But in there, it said that the stated purpose of the Korean War, the actual purpose, was to find out what it was that brought various cultures together, such as black folks, Indians, Orientals, white people in this country. What brought them all together? What was it? What was the cohesiveness that allowed them to take up arms and fight together against one common foe, because they found that over the years, for instance, all throughout Europe or Asia, Africa, South America, most countries are so busy fighting each other, and most cultures are so busy fighting
right.
each other that they could never get together to fight one common enemy. But
right.
something unique in our country happened, and they wanted to find out what it was. And they did find that out, and they found out that it was a common religious beliefs. It was the ability to be free, to have a free enterprise, engage in capitalism. All of these things that made our country a whole litany of them, a huge list. And they wanted to find out what that was so that they could attack those areas and
yeah.
break them down. And it was, the harsh instruction at school, parental control, all of these things that they found, a belief in God, a belief in Christianity, or whatever their God happened to be.
Right.
And they wanted to find these so that they could separate this country and beat us militarily and in other every other
John,
aspect.
John, hang on until right after the break, and we'll get back, finish up your comment and get to your question. So hang on one moment. And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And we still have John hanging on with us, I hope. John, you want to finish up that comment and get to that question?
Yes, yes. And so what they did is they found out what made us strong so that they could know what to attack, and they've done a good job of it. And that's how they learned and how they knew what to attack to make us weak and overtake this country, to turn it upside down, you know, the theory of reversals that they do. And I guess my question is, have you ever heard of the book? And if so, did it state that in there? It's called The Interrogation, Indoctrination, and Exploitation of American POWs in Korea.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I was really appalled that when John McCain met his captor here in the United States, that he didn't walk up to him and punch him in the nose, rather than laughing and shaking his hand and hugging him. And I was just really taken back by that. Do you know that circumstance that I was talking about?
It could even be residual effect from his captivity. You know, these guys take a very powerful position over people's minds when they're in that situation, and that hangs out. I mean, that residual doesn't necessarily ever go away. The other thing is about the document itself that you mentioned. I have not seen it. If anyone out there has got a copy of that, our address is on the RBN Live website, so please forward it on to us. We'd like to see it. You know, the thing that happens in a lot of this is over time, you know, people forget. You know, when you talk about American values being the anchor for the country, you know, you raised a really important point when you get into these issues. There was a publication, by the U.S. Army War College, called The Revolution of Military Affairs and Conflict Short of War. It was produced in 1989 or 1990, and it's a public document. And it talks about the changes in technology, including the very changes that we're talking about today. That paper also covers the use of implants on military personnel and private citizens as perhaps a way of gaining greater control over populations. They talk about knocking out aircraft using new technologies, you know, and then they get into this debate about the constitutionality of these things because, you know, I mean, without declarations of war and the targets they were focused on were terrorists and international drug traffickers. Remember, this is 1989, way before 9/11. And what they said is that the very weapon systems they were contemplating, from implants to knocking out aircraft, would violate the Constitution and violate foundational American values that are shared in common, regardless of political persuasion. But what they said, the U.S. Army War College said in this paper, was forget about those values. And they began to talk about how do you get around American values in order to bring in new technologies that conflict with those very foundational values. When you talk about mind control or implant technologies, most people find that highly offensive. And when you look at our work on RFID tags and identification systems back from 1999 in the book called Earth Rising, the Revolution, over 650 sources are cited there that are mainstream government sources or academic sources. And when you look at the complexity of how these systems are evolving, it's really about control, because what they said in this paper as an example of a misuse is, say that the United States with this technology could locate drug traffickers coming into the country. Well, let's catch it after the break. It's too long of a story to catch it before the break. Again, we're changing the way we see the world with Dr. Nick Begich, and we're on RBN Live. So stay with us right after the break. Back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And this is a weekly show. We're going to be on from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. Central Time, so pass the word on and tune in for this program on a weekly basis. Today's subject is physical control of the mind and both the misapplications and perhaps some other applications that we'll get into in this hour. I want to mention two websites. The research for this program is provided by the Lay Institute, Incorporated, a Texas-based corporation. You can get information on the Lay Institute by looking at layinstitute.org on the internet, and you can also get information on our books and publications at earthpulse.com, earthpulse.com. And I also want to give a toll-free number for people calling into today's program. It's 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. And just before the break, we were talking about this U.S. Army War College paper. It was a Revolution of Military Affairs and Conflict Short of War. And one of the things they talked about was the idea of, first of all, creating an environment of fear, and that environment of fear that they imagined would be the most effective in 1989 was one dealing with international terrorism and international drug trafficking. And they would use technologies to intercept, say, a plane load full of drug dealers and knock them out of the sky, cause them to crash, destroy the plane, and then you would have plausible deniability because you couldn't show any residual damage. Because what would be used for doing this in this paper was an energy-based weapon that would knock out the controls of that aircraft and cause it to crash. Now, the idea in this thing was the paper said, hey, it's no problem. We're outside of the U.S. boundaries. The Constitution doesn't apply. And they forgot that, you know, the Constitution is what our men and women in the service swear an allegiance to. They carry that Constitution with them wherever they go. They don't leave it at the doorstep of the country. And what they said is, because we can leave it, in their theory, at the doorstep of the country, that we could use this intelligence and use it in a way that forgot about such things as presumptions of innocence, you know, courts and juries of your peers. I mean, if we have a technology that can track a group of international terrorists or drug traffickers, we ought to be able to track them until they land and execute a proper arrest, because we can make mistakes. And they even talked about the fact that we could make mistakes. And then it was just 2 years ago that many will remember this story, that the Peruvian Air Force provided intelligence by the United States government, shot down an aircraft, a small plane that didn't contain the drug traffickers our so-called intelligence said it contained. There were missionaries on board that plane, Christian missionaries knocked out of the sky by U.S. intelligence provided to the Peruvian Air Force under this theory of law that our Constitution doesn't go where our military servicemen and women go, which I think most Americans would find very offensive, that anyone in a U.S. Army college or a college English training, military leadership would ever ascribe to a philosophy that said ignore the American public. In fact, it's the American public that should be heard. In fact, it's the American public that should decide what policy directions we had, because this is a government of the people, for the people, by the people, and not for corporate interests because they are around and because they can make the payoffs. Our government has been corrupted at its root values that are now being expressed through our institutions, which is what has made this thing so dangerous. When we get into these technologies of physical control of the mind, that is even more disconcerting because of the way in which this technology is headed. We're gonna go back to John for just a minute, see if we can get his question on, and then we're going to move to Jeff in Massachusetts. John, are you still with me? Sounds like John is gone. Let's get Jeff up in Massachusetts if he's still there.
Hi, yes. Good afternoon. How's it going?
Going well. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right.
All right. What's on your mind?
Two to three. I hear the music.
Yep. Hold on, Jeff. We'll catch you right after the break. See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. And again, this program will be aired every Wednesday from 11 till 1 p.m. on Central Time, so pass the word on and have your friends tune in. Jeff, we were just getting ready to hear your comment or question. Are you still with me from Massachusetts?
Yes. A comment. Have you read the book called Betrayed by Joseph Douglas and America at the Brink, Oblivion by Thomas Bearden, who's a lieutenant colonel in the Army, retired?
I know of Bearden's work. I've read quite a bit of it. The other book I haven't read. Bearden's done some great stuff over the years, and he's got a good website up now. I can't recall the name of it right off, but if you just do a search under Bearden, you'll see a lot of his research materials, and fortunately it's getting put onto the Internet where it can be accessible. This is a real important aspect of this kind of research. The more information that's available, the better the chances are. At least we can be informed and perhaps at some point develop a better approach to using these technologies.
Oh, exactly. Now, here's my main point, which is I believe that there's a receptability to scalar wave technology, and that is through the use of drugs. Now, there's another book written by Joseph Douglas called Betrayed. Now, Joseph Douglas interviewed Jan Seja, who was a general in the Czechoslovakian military, who oversaw the pumping of drugs into this country, and drugs was to be used as a form of chemical warfare to basically dumb down the minds of the American public. Because you see, not everybody's going to go along with the scalar waves that are hitting this country, and I really believe that drugs, narcotics, and liquor are good receptors to receive the hypnotic signals from these technologies. And what a perfect way to do this than to pump drugs into this country, and not just narcotics, but drugs like Ritalin, Prozac,
right,
all these other obscene drugs.
Well, let's address a couple of the points you've raised, Jeff, and we'll keep you on for a minute here. But first, let's talk about this idea of the drugging of America. You know, the first major program happened in the first Bush administration, and he was pushing for a program that would have cost $400 million and it involved going into inner-city schools. Now, this would have been in the 1980s, 90s, early 90s vintage of time, but they were going to go into inner-city schools and look at and interview teachers to figure out who was acting out within classrooms, and then they were going to interview the kids and test them and then interview the parents. And then the idea was to initiate a massive drug program across the country. And part of this discussion was about trying to draw some linkage between criminal behavior and genetics by isolating behavioral problem kids and then keeping them from acting out. Now, the problem with this, are many. I mean, obviously there's many. But one of them is the basic characteristics that, that the potential criminal has is the same kind of characteristic the potential leader has, because it's about people that don't conform. It's people that don't necessarily fit in. It's people that might challenge authority. The difference is the way in which they're raised and the way in which they interpret that type of leadership potential. Many teachers are intimidated by it, so they want to shut it up. Many parents are intimidated by it, so they want to drug it up. But the reality is, if we channel that kind of personality into utilizing it in a much different way, and this is where family strength and family units and educational systems are breaking down, then we can turn it around. But it's not about that. It's about control. People that speak out, people that don't conform, are the challenge of any power in power. And those are the very foundations that made this country great, were the few that spoke out within these environments. But that initiative was killed back in its first resurrection. I guess it was the early 90s when this was coming up. And it got killed because of some of the statements being made by those behind it. It has resurrected in recent years again, and you have seen the results of it, the massive drugging of America. The first place it was addressed by the Congress, and we cite this in a book on mind control that will be coming out later this year, called Controlling the Human Mind, where the Congress in the 1970s, the early 70s, when my dad was in the Congress, first looked at this issue, and there were huge caution points about the drugging of America. And yet, here we are 33 years later, and they've actually affected the plan. You look across this country, and there are more people on psychoactive drugs than ever before. And when you talked about Bearden's work and the idea of resonances or energy being manipulated in a way using scalars, this is very important. And let me just explain what a scalar is in a very simple way. A vector source of energy starts with a point where the energy starts, like a radio broadcast coming off of a radio antenna, and then it follows a time and distance relationship. It travels, it travels at a velocity. Scalars are a very weird animal. They actually are mentioned by definition in the radio frequency dosimetry handbook produced by the Air Force when they were first looking at radio frequency effects on the human body and brain. And they raised the issue of scalars, and I think the caller is correct, and I think Bearden is correct. This is the
essence
of how you affect the human body, because these energy fields bypass time and space and exist simultaneously. And so I think that's what we're, you know, what we're really talking about there in terms of scalars.
Nick,
Jeff, you had something else you wanted to add.
Oh, yes. Now I believe this to be true, which is, and Cleon Skousen said this, which is, communism and capitalism are two competing predators. We are about to be swallowed by the communist predator that we created. We created a monster. Now, Henry Gruber had a video. And on that video, he talks about submarines coming to the American coast and firing missiles at the American coast. Now, it would take me a long time to really describe the details of scalar wave technology, which most Americans don't even know about scalar waves, nor do they know about HARP, for that matter. So what's going to happen at the end of the day is the East Coast and the West Coast will both be destroyed, and the communists will split this country down the middle and take our breadbasket. We are ready to be conquered, and all that we are seeing now is just tools being utilized by these people to put this country through the shredder, and then we'll have a UN-style police state, Chinese communist style.
Well, none of that would really surprise me. What you say about both systems having huge problems, I agree with you. You know, when you think about capitalism in the purest sense, it was really about sort of being able to express yourself freely within the monetary system. I mean, because what we came from in Europe, you know, in terms of the way the economy ran there, you were stuck on the farm, you know, literally, by the wealthy and those with the right genetics, I guess. But the point of the matter is, in this country, we tried to set up a form of freedom that allowed us to be rewarded for our own effort. And what has happened is we created a very different kind of capitalism. You know, that kind of capitalism I called ideal-based. Well, the origin was ideal-based. It was the idea that, hey, you had the ability as a human being to express yourself as an individual in a really great way, but you were still accountable. And we created a corporate structure, And here's the difference. Corporations have almost all the same rights as you and I as human beings. They can go into court. They can be represented by lawyers. They live forever, which is kind of strange, you know, in terms of the physical world. And the other thing they don't have that we have is a human soul that directs what we do and filters out what's right and wrong. Corporations don't have this. They have a bottom line. And what we've seen over 200 years is the rise of corporations at the expense of individuals within the country. And in the course of that, we've lost our compass where capitalism now serves the interest of multinationals. It doesn't serve national interests. It doesn't serve human interests. It doesn't serve individual interests, except at the very instance maybe in its formation when there was still a founder that had some philosophy that he tried to express or she tried to express through their corporation. The reality is, corporations have become the dominant force on the planet. They're driving much of the technology that we're talking about today. And the real issue has more to do with control than about empowerment and freeing people. And this is where I think the issue of mind control, and for the remainder of the hour where I want to take this issue, is the flip side. What establishment fears more than anything are two things. One is when people fully engage their brains and begin to act as the responsible citizens we were meant to be, which is to run our government, to decide as lay people how our government should reflect our values in the terms of legislation, international policy, and the way we treat each other. And we don't see that in the country today. The level of tolerance that we used to have for political debate is gone, or at least deconstructed in a way that keeps everybody fighting. Well, these corporate interests are sold out to all of those in power, and we end up being the losers. And when you talk about empowering people today in a technological world where greater and greater capacity of each of us is required, we need to take these tools that can enhance human performance and start utilizing them in a proper way. You know, back when the airplane was invented over 100 years ago, people thought that was horrible. You know, man wasn't meant to fly. We shouldn't be flying around. There was all that kind of discussion. And yet, you know, today we understand that it's not the airplane. It's the will of man that determines whether the airplane delivers a passenger or delivers a bomb. And I think that's true with these technologies. The difference is we're talking about things that can affect not our freedom of speech or our freedom of religion or our freedom of assembly, but the very thing that underlies all of that is the freedom to think and feel freely. And the idea of drugging down America or utilizing technologies to affect American thinking process is fundamentally wrong. And when you look at the international research on this subject at leading institutions like Harvard, like Yale, like Laurentian University, like the universities across the Soviet Union, and even in China where this issue has been discussed in the open literature on the idea of physically affecting and controlling human beings. And I can tell you, in the long range, it's about a philosophy and a value system that makes a country great. It's not about selling out to the highest bidder, and that's what this country has done in the case of China. We'll be right back after the break, and you're listening to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. Maybe I'll win if I do. Airs every Wednesday from 11 till 1 p.m. Central Time. So pass the word on and let us hear from you. The call-in number for today is 800-313-9443. And in a second, we'll go back to the callers. I also want to mention, if you're interested in the material we're covering today, you can get more information at earthpulse.com. And that is our website. And also we have a toll-free number. If you're interested in the DVD on the same subject, which is called Mind Control, you can call 888-690-1277, 888-690-1277. And we were talking with Jeff in Massachusetts. Jeff, are you still with me? Okay, Jeff is off. Let's go to Marilyn in California. Marilyn, are you still standing by? Okay, well, let's just go on then. Marilyn apparently has dropped off the line. Again, our call-in number, if you want to call into today's program, is 800-313-9443. Let's kind of flip this around a little bit. You know, the last hour and a half we've been talking about sort of the misuses of this technology and how it works against us. Let's talk about some of the things that are happening that are pretty exciting. You know, we had talked a lot about Ritalin and the use of Ritalin and drugs on children in the American public as a way to modify behavior. You know, there was a program that was originally it was tested in the Minneapolis school districts, and since that time it's spread quite a bit to other school districts around the country. And what it was is the idea of finding an alternative to Ritalin. And what they did in the Minneapolis school district, they set up a charter school that was designed for all the kids that were on psychoactive drugs that had attention deficit disorders or were hyperactive, where they couldn't get their brain within that range where you can think and focus your attention. And so what they did is they began to use a system called neurobiofeedback or brain biofeedback. And what it would look like is these kids would be wearing these little helmets that had built into them electrodes that monitored what was going on within the brain. And then they looked at computer screens right in front of them, and because their brains were either operating too slow or too fast where they couldn't focus their attention, they would use exercises where the kids would see in real time maybe a ball bouncing. And that ball's bounce, how high it bounced, or a person running a race and how they ran that race would determine or be reflective of their brain activity. So let me give you the example. In the case of deep states of sleep, our brain activity has a predominant pulse rate or a frequency or hertz rate of about 1 to 4 hertz or vibrations or pulses per second. In the next state, which is called theta, well, this is where you are between awake and asleep and where children are between the ages of about 4 and 6. They spend a lot of time in this predominant brain activity. It's where human as adults are between that awake and asleep state where you're kind of aware of your dreams, but you're also aware that you're awake. It's kind of that dreamy, imaginative state. Well, this is where, when kids are at that age, if you think about it, kids have a lot of trouble determining reality from imagination. We keep saying, hey, don't think that, don't think that. This is a normal way these kids' brains operate at that age. And so we start kids way too early, where when they're operating in that range, we try to speed them up. So we give them...
Welcome back to Change the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. I apologize. We've been having some technical difficulties with the communication linkages today. I'm up here in Alaska, and the board is down there in Texas, so we're a little distance apart, and apparently we've got a storm going on down there that might be partially responsible for this interference. So I hope people can hear me okay now. We're on a landline that might be a little bit better. But I'm going to have to go back, and I don't know where we dropped out. External monitoring of what's going on in the brain and then using feedback where you have visual images such as a computer screen with children working with that computer screen. So maybe there's somebody running a race, and that's the idea is just to win that race. And what the child doesn't realize is that when he's winning the race, his brain activity is in that zone. The idea that you can actually take 1 to 4 hertz, which is where we are in deep states of sleep. This is the pulse rate or vibration rate of the energy that would predominantly show up in a brain scan. If you go back to 4 to, say, 7 hertz of pulses per second, this is the theta range. This is where young children are between the age of 4 and 6. And it's where adults are in that semi-awake state where you're aware of your dreams, but you're not quite awake yet. This is where those 4 to 6-year-olds spend a good deal of their time, which explains a lot of their behaviors. It becomes confusing and frustrating for adults. The next level is the alpha level. This is where you are in your ideal state of learning or when you're in that zone. This is where we want to be when we're studying or doing that real creative kind of work. And then above that is the beta range. And as you get further and further above in the beta range, you get into this range of hyperactivity. Now, the idea between the psychoactive drugs is to get people into the right frame to learn. The problem is the basic model creates lots of toxic situations for children. Now, in the Minneapolis School District, where they actually had a neurobiofeedback program within a charter school that was operating there, they were able at the end of the first year to take 80% of the children off of psychoactive drugs because they had learned in 30 to 41 hour sessions how to manipulate their brain activity. Ride a bike and fall down a few times, and then you can really learn that, and you can leave the bike alone for 20 years, pick it back up, and ride it as if you had never stopped. And that's the kind of laying down of knowledge that we need in terms of how our brains actually work. So instead of using chemicals to achieve this, using monitoring of our own activity to see what's going on, and then by learning, by having that feedback on the computer screen, manipulate that brain activity in a way that yields much different results. In other words, these kids are able to focus their attention in a way that other people can't or maybe can more efficiently than many of us, and it's from that biofeedback. They're learning it also. They're using it also for stroke recovery, victims, alcohol and drug abuse. But neurobiofeedback is, in fact, one of those technologies that can be used either way. It's that two-edged sword that technology offers, both solutions and maybe perhaps problems. But in this case, this is the solution side. The other areas, in terms of psychic driving, the idea of manipulating the brain, what has been learned is that external energy sources, whether it be flickering light or whether it be certain oscillating sound signals or acoustic signals or electromagnetic. Functions. What we're really dealing with are electromagnetic activity, energetic functions that underlie those chemical reactions, something that the physicist clearly understands, but the chemist may not have a full cognizance and appreciation of. And this is, again, where the science sort of breaks off, because what has been learned is that very subtle amounts of energy in the right frequency range can affect the body profoundly or the mind profoundly, almost like tuning in a radio. You know, in between the stations, you get static. But when you get online and you get a good, solid connection, what do you get? You get resonance, harmony between the transmitter and the receiver, and you hear the sound signal clearly. The same is true with every element of the human body, whether it be on an atomic level, a molecular level, or a full body organ or a full body level. Certain energies will interact with us in a way that can create then chemical reactions. For instance, you can radiate a person with the energy frequency of iodine, and all of us have iodine in the body in an amount that hopefully is balanced and leads to good health. But when it's out of whack, it can create huge problems if we're with the iodine that's already in the body, and begin to amplify sort of its signal to the rest of the body in a way where the body thinks it's been toxically supplied with a material and begins to react. Get all the symptoms of iodine poisoning, and yet when they do the blood workup or look at the thyroid or test an individual, they don't find anything that would indicate elevated levels of iodine, but there's all the symptoms. It's classified as a mystery illness. But this is the root of much of the science that's being developed today, is based upon the idea of manipulating energy to create physical effect. And what you're going to see is the emergence, increasingly the emergence of electromedicine, where we drop the chemical model and exchange it for the chemical-electrical model that physicians now follow and researchers follow. We're going to drop that eventually for an electromagnetic model from which these other things take their form. And therein lies the root to the revolution of military affairs and the use of this technology in the wrong way, and the root for taking a look at how this might be applied to life sciences. And this is where the brain, I mean, think about it. I mean, we talked about for decades of how the human being can only use 10 or 12% of the brain if they're lucky. Well, what has been done at Yale University by Delgado and others is a research that looks at the whole brain in terms of how do you, what is responsible for what activity, and they've actually mapped and biology from the University of Madrid, came to the United States in the mid-60s and worked at Yale University on mapping the mind, became famous for this. And by the mid-80s, he found that manipulating radio frequency energy, which is the stuff of radio, basically microwave energy, in a very specific way at very, very low energetic concentrations. He could manipulate the behavior of human beings from making them passive to aggressive, like flipping on and off a light switch. And he did this with radio frequency energy and no physical contact to the human body, and at energy concentrations 1/50th as powerful as what the Earth, by its own nature, creates in terms of radio frequency. In other words, the natural background radiation that we have on the planet, which is nothing compared to what man makes. I mean, man produces 200 million times more radio frequency surrounding each and every one of us at this very instant than what the Earth creates. And yet, at 1/50th, or less than 1/1,000,000,000th of the amount of energy that man puts on the planet, can kind of weed through that fog and isolate itself in a way that affects the body. In other words, it can pick out that station that affects us physically through all that static and background noise, and Delgado demonstrated this in the lab at Yale. And what he basically disclosed is the root, again, of a technology that is leading the way in the revolution in military affairs and leading the way for independent researchers in terms of really looking at how do we stimulate the brain, not just for negative effects, but for positive effects. And one of the big debates of the last decade and the decade before was this right brain, left brain. You know, the idea that one side is responsible for the creative, one is responsible for the analytical, and we have two halves of the brain, and this is, and women tend to be more intuitive, so they have that side of the brain active, and men tend to be less intuitive and more analytical, and that has that brain active. And that's changed. I mean, the way we educate people today has changed that quite a bit. But when you look at this underlying whole brain effect, to work together, and technologies have been evolved to do exactly that, to enhance people's performance by using what God gave us in the first place, and then by using it, learning how to use more and more of our own capacity so that we can truly be reflective of having been created in the image of the Creator in the first place, which has a whole lot more to do with who we are internally and a whole lot less to do with what we look like externally. And I think that's the connection. Look at technology. If we can advance what we were created as human beings to do and to start to strip away the systems that impede that, that get in the way of that, and much of what we're seeing is fear from governments, because when people are fully empowered within democratic republics, things change, and things change fast. You know, that was one of the things that I've mentioned. There's two things the government really fears about the population. One of them is that we start thinking again and we engage the process again, and we start to utilize increasing portions of our intellectual capacity to evolution. I'm not talking about violence here. I'm talking about changes in the way we see things. When you think about Eastern Europe, when it fell in the 80s, it wasn't like there was a bunch of leaders standing around that somebody could go and shoot the way they used to. It was spontaneous. When you look at the Philippines, when they changed out the Marcos government, it was spontaneous. If you look anywhere in the world, this kind of spontaneous sort of everyone wakes up one day and says, hey, we all feel a little different these days and we're making a change. That's the one thing in all military planning documents they cannot guard against, because when it happens, it's the flame that's been lit and cannot be extinguished. And I think where we are in the United States, and I think many will agree, is we're at a point of asking ourselves, do we need that revolution in thinking? And I think that's why these programs are out there in the first place. We're trying to stimulate a different way of seeing this world so that we can make some changes in it. And it's the call to patriotism that has to do with who we are fundamentally as human beings, because it starts there. It starts with the actions of individuals. What we decide to do and project into the world around us is what's important. We can have a lot of ideas and a lot of concepts, but I think what each of us is called to do is to act on what we know to be right and true and try and get that information out in a way that doesn't breed fear and discontent. Quite the opposite. We need to be empowered. We need to be more capable and recognize that we have the capability of making a real change in our communities and literally around the world. idea of mind control as a subject has been and is what we consider one of the most controversial issues that, that we've covered over the years. And the reason we've dedicated some time to it today is I think it's the most important. When you think about governments today talking about changing the way we think, changing our value systems, and then you look at the technologies that are being developed, that is a reality. That's a new world order that we don't need. It's a change in the fundamentals, because if our founding fathers had even suspected that anyone could manipulate what happened within our brains, that would have been the first amendment to the Constitution, because in order to preserve speech, assembly, and freedom of religion, we have to think and feel freely. And I think, again, when you look at the technologies and some of the opportunities that they present, they need to be outside of the cloak of secrecy that's hidden behind the public by government and put into the hands of the people, so we can use this technology to advance ourselves, not to limit ourselves. I mentioned during one of the segments the idea that this agency and release to Congress dealt with this long-term approach of the Chinese in developing these very same technologies. And the difference between them and us, they spent 30, 40, 50 years mapping out a strategy that pushes their philosophy into reality. That's the danger of our so-called trade partner, China, is China offers the opportunity for a complete dominance of our economy that we have started to see the impacts of, the ability of them to create another superpower. We have created that superpower that challenges our value system in a long-term way. And those are the things that will shape and change the way we see the world. You know, when the caller asked, you know, would it be possible, you know, with scalers for people to affect the country and damage our coastlines, the answer is yes. But even more importantly, these technologies, these very technologies that we're discussing, are technologies that can be utilized covertly by any government or any private organization, for that matter, with sophistication to understand and develop the tools. And, you know, today that sophistication is getting more and more widespread. And, you know, these technologies can also be guarded against. The first step is acknowledging that they exist. The next step is to deal with countermeasures to make sure American freedom and American values, as well as every sovereign value held by every sovereign person across this planet within their own countries, can be preserved, so we can have the right to self-determination, shape the governments that we call our own, and not have them shaped for us. We still have Rita hanging in Colorado. We can maybe take that call. Nope, I guess Rita's gone. Well, we're getting close to the break. I can talk a little bit more about what's coming up on next week. I want to talk a little bit about HARP. I want to get people up to speed on that issue, and we have some updates on what's happening with that system. HARP was where our issue started in terms of communicating with the public on technologies. For those that don't know, HARP is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project. And let's go back to see if we have any more callers hanging in. Looks like we've lost our callers. Call-in number today is 800-313-9443. I apologize for the technical difficulties we've had through the show today. We'll try and overcome that by next week's program. And, again, we're airing this Wednesdays. This program will be aired on Wednesdays from 11 till 1 p.m. Central Time. And we're going to be exploring technologies and their impacts. In future shows, we'll bring in some guests that we've met around the world and people we think will be interested, and listeners will be interested in hearing from. Again, let's go back to this issue of fiscal control of the mind. Let's talk about some of the other applications that are out there. We talked a little bit about driving, but there are technologies, for instance, light and sound technologies, that literally push the brain into this whole brain kind of effect. And so what can happen with light and sound, remember a few years ago, some will remember this story, we had a number of years ago an incident in Japan where 700 kids had gone to the hospital with epileptic seizures having watched a cartoon. You know, that cartoon was essentially the flicker rate that caused the brain to trigger into that epileptic seizure. I think we're headed for a break, so we'll go into that break, and then when we... And welcome back to Changing the Way We See the World with Dr. Nick Begich. We're in the last segment. We have Rita back on, so we'll go ahead and take that as our last call of the day. Go ahead, Rita. Are you with me?
I wanted to say that what we could really think about changing the way we think is what we get in schools a lot, and what's kind of reaching a dead end is pluralism. That's how basic the anchors are that we've got to work on. There, kids don't understand that there's pluralism and there's also basic dualism, and they never learn about dualism in schools anymore. And you know, that's what kids need. A lot of people just need to be in that environment. I don't know if they have to get out of the school system altogether to learn about God and to incorporate God in their world, but that's basically what we come against with this sort of this secularism that's kind of gone to the extreme of now. We don't have as much tolerance anymore because we tried to make it so, you know, one size fits all for everybody. Now we don't have the tolerance. We don't have the stoic Americanism anymore, you know. So that's just the point that I thought I could add to what you were talking about.
Right. You know, it's this idea of, you know, tolerance is, you know, is one of the basic foundations of the country. The idea that we could constructively disagree with one another and yet still occupy the same country. You know, one of the callers said what made us great, you know, as a nation was the fact that we could lay all our differences aside at those times when the nation was called to come together and be standing next to each other, you know, and with very different backgrounds and beliefs defend the very system that allows us to have those differences. And, you know, these challenges of today aren't any different than the challenges of our founding fathers. You know, today we got the backdrop of a lot more complicated lives and technology, but we're still the same kind of people, you know, that we were always created to be, not to be stomped on and to be self. But, you know, the very God that created us in his image gave us this ability to create and to use that knowledge and information and technology and all the things that we're able to do through our creative capacity. But we have free will that decides whether we use it for good or we use it for evil. When you think about the issue of mind control, the issue we've covered today, in most religions around the world, including the Christian faith, God doesn't even interfere with free will. And this is what we've been talking about, the idea that human beings interfering with the free will of man as if these weapons technologies were good for us, these are fundamentally flawed in the basis of evil. Controlling another human being is fundamentally wrong. The idea of taking things that can enhance our performance that are within our individual control is a whole other matter. It's like getting on that airplane and flying to L.A. Versus taking a bus. Now, those are decisions we can make about our technology, but they need to serve our interest rather than work against our interest. And I think that's where we've gotten disconnected from the national agenda. It no longer reflects those basic values we share in common. You know, this is an election year. It's a year we can start to take a chunk of this back. When people come to our neighborhoods and come to our areas asking for their support and for our support as voters, we need to express the concerns about the issues that we each and individually are concerned about, whether they're the ones we've talked to today or other matters. And let's step into that. You know, this program will be on again next Wednesday from 11 till 1. We invite listeners to come into the discussion, and let's change the way we see the world. Again, this is Dr. Nick Begich, and we're on RBN Live talking about the issues of the 21st century.